This is Jim Tester, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Today we have a change in our schedule. I was originally going to be interviewing Judy Wood. I've invited her to come on the show Tuesday. The reason being that I've discovered a new contributor, someone who's been doing excellent work related in many different ways to issues of 9/11, but also to broader issues related to the health of the world and what may be going on in terms of a big picture. She has a B.S. in geology from Davis, a master's in the Near Eastern Studies from Berkeley. She completed all but her dissertation in geosciences at UC Davis. She's traveled and conducted scientific research in 42 countries. She's contributed to a scientific report on depleted uranium for the United Nations Subcommission investigating the illegality of depleted uranium munitions. Marion Folk, a former Manhattan Project scientist and retired insider from the Lawrence Livermore Lab, who is an expert on radio fallout and rainout, has trained her on radiation issues. It's a great pleasure to welcome to the Dynamic Duo, Lauren Moray. Lauren, welcome.
Thank you very much, Jim, and you just gave me a facelift.
I'll just say, you know, when I saw your paper for Hiroshima to Iraq, 61 years of uranium wars, a suicidal, genocidal, omnicidal course, I just had to have you on. The work you're doing is so profoundly important, and the fact that you're an expert in the analysis of dust with respect to, you know, from a nuclear point of view, this is absolutely fascinating and terribly important to ongoing issues and related to 9/11 research. I hardly know where to begin. What would you suggest?
Well, I did a Girl Scout Jamboree camp with about 500 girls one summer, and the mother of one of the Girl Scouts said, "Lady, you sure make dirt interesting."
Well, this is quite fascinating because, you know, the leading scientist in 9/11 research, Judy Wood, has been doing a tremendous amount of work on dust and dirt. And, in fact, today we would have been talking about her dirt research. So there's a tremendous overlap in your interests, Lauren.
Oh, I just love dirty scientists. I'm going to have fun with her.
This is terrific. This is just terrific.
You know, Jim, the key to 9/11 is at the World Trade Center and at the Pentagon too. It's the dust particles and the tremendous amounts of energy that were needed to make such a large volume of very, very tiny particles. That's the Achilles heel of 9/11.
The tremendous energy required to create such a massive number of very, very tiny particles.
That's right.
I think it
didn't happen from thermite.
Yes. Well, I think those of us who've been looking at this seriously have drawn exactly that conclusion, that while thermite or thermate may have been a contributor, that it's not at all, not even remotely adequate to have brought about the massive degree of pulverization.
Not on the same scale at all. I'm sorry for interrupting you.
That's fine. Those who want to advocate for something called super thermite or thermite that's supposed to have explosive properties, which thermite as a cutter charge doesn't possess. But I'm just beginning to take a look at that, and I have doubts. Are you aware of such stuff as super thermite?
Yeah.
I think
that's part of the cover-up. I think it's part of the sales pitch.
Yeah, please tell me more about that, because this is really fascinating and of great importance to the research community.
Well, when I looked at the tremendous amount, volume of extremely tiny particles that were produced with the collapse of the World Trade Center buildings, that collapse didn't look like the footprint or the characteristic fingerprints of any other controlled demolition. And, of course, I work on depleted uranium issues, which is a particulate issue. And the reason that depleted uranium is so deadly is because it burns at extremely high temperatures. It's a metal that's called pyrophoric. So it burns at 5,000 to 6,000 degrees or even higher. It gets hotter than the sun. And that energy, that tremendous heat and energy, breaks the bonds and produces many, many, many extremely tiny particles. They're called nanoparticles of what basically vaporized uranium, which forms oxides at very high temperatures. And when they condense, or this poison radioactive gas quenches, it forms these little round, hollow uranium oxide particles. The uranium metal has a density of over 19, and the uranium oxide particles have a density of less than 1. So they are bumped around and remain permanently suspended in the atmosphere because of Brownian motion, the air molecules bumping into them and keeping them suspended. And what people don't realize is they have a radioactive effect. They're an alpha particle and gamma ray emitter. They have a chemical effect, a uranium heavy chemical effect, and uranium is particularly toxic as a metal because it's non-stoichiometric and it's biologically unpredictable. But the third effect, the particulate effect of particles that are a tenth of a micron or smaller, is the deadliest biotoxin known. It's just from the very tiny size. And so all the residents of New York City who were exposed have something that's very similar to Gulf War syndrome. It's a web of diseases. It's a complete attack on the body. It messes up all the information flow in the cells and between the cells and the organs. And it makes the whole body dysfunctional. It's different for every person, and it changes over time. And there were radionuclides. There were metals. There were all kinds of things in the World Trade Center collapse and that big dust cloud. And then the pile that continued burning for 5 months afterwards. So the World Trade Center is has not really been analyzed in depth in terms of the particulates, which are the clue to the amount of energy used, and that's a clue to the technologies used.
So you're suggesting that a thorough study of dust that would be, you know, truly random in its character, many samples taken from many locations, many altitudes and so forth, could offer crucial clues to what actually happened.
Well, the air was already monitored by Dr. Thomas Cahill, and this is where Los Alamos and the nuclear weapons labs and the Department of Energy begin to show their true colors and involvement in the events of 9/11. They've remained very hidden, but Thomas Cahill is a professor at UC Davis. He's emeritus now, but he and a consortium of international scientists formed something called the Delta Group, which is to do extremely sophisticated surveillance or analysis all over the world on air pollution. And they have developed extremely sophisticated apparatus to study air pollution and to collect particles and to determine particle size. And he's the one who did air monitoring at the World Trade Center for 5 months at the request of someone in the Department of Energy.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Lauren Murray. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Today, my special guest is Lauren Murray, and we're discussing depleted uranium, dust at the World Trade Center, and related issues, which are going to assume a rather broad scope as we continue. Lauren, for the sake of our audience, I'd like to go back to the World Trade Center and your observation that what happened there required a massive amount of energy that far exceeded the resources of thermite or thermate, and that the analysis of the dust holds a key, and you are suggesting some properties of the dust that gave clues as to what might have been the origin of that massive source of energy.
Yes, and what you want to do is to look at scanning electron microscope photos of the actual dust particles. It'll give you a clue as to the temperatures that were reached in this pulverization process, and also what perhaps the energy quality. So the dust particles are a big clue, at least to me and probably other people who work with particulates. And I think it's interesting that that has been completely ignored. Now, what Thomas Cahill reported, now what's interesting is the Department of Energy asked him to do the air monitoring, but it wasn't until a month after 9/11. So they were very careful. They were hiding something, and he was not paid for the study or offered any money or grant or contract or anything. It was basically a volunteer job, which gives him control of all of the information.
It also, however, probably is a disincentive for moving rapidly. It would mean he'd do it when he had time free. It wouldn't be a priority. More time would pass, and I presume, therefore, all of those elements whose half-life is relatively brief would have disappeared and decayed.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And so by not calling them in for a month, if there were very short-lived half-lives or radioactive isotopes produced or used, they would disappear. And we know from bomb craters in Lebanon from the 4,000 DU bunker buster bombs that the U.S. gave Iraq to use in the July attack last summer that there were excessively high or anonymously high radiation levels which decayed very rapidly over a period of a few weeks in those bomb craters. And that's not characteristic of depleted uranium bombs. There was also Dr. Chris Busby, the European Parliament and British government expert on low-level radiation, had samples collected in the bomb craters, and they were analyzed at the Harwell British government radiation laboratory, and they discovered deuterium in the bomb material. So that's a signature of a nuclear weapon. Now, there were also anomalously high levels of uranium-235 present that were detected. So that could be a fission fusion, fission product of a fourth generation nuclear weapon. So we need to consider that and to consider the evidence at the World Trade Center, because the clues are all there, but they're being hidden from those who would know how to interpret what they mean.
Now, I've heard rather strong reactions to the suggestion that mini nukes of any kind, atomic hydrogen, third generation, fourth generation, could have been used at the World Trade Center by persons such as Stephen Jones, who suggested that there was no deuterium detected there, but he never mentioned when the deuterium was measured, nor whether it could be the case that we might find other ways of detecting its presence.
Well, who did he ask about the deuterium? I mean, you know, maybe he just can say, well, I didn't hear about it or whatever, but certainly the radionuclides were measured very carefully at the World Trade Center site, and people reported to me, in fact, it was a Manhattan Project scientist retired from the Livermore lab. He said, Loren, I saw EPA officials in full protective gear, the highest level with air tanks on their backs. I saw them present one time on television walking around the World Trade Center measuring stuff. And he said all the emergency responders didn't even have masks on. They were just in regular clothing. And he said, I also saw it at the Pennsylvania bomb site, or the crash site there. So why was the EPA there fully suited up when the emergency responders were in absolutely had no protective levels at all of anything, not even from the particulates in the air? And he measured the highest concentrations of metals in air that have ever been measured in air samples in the U.S., and he measured the highest bulk mass of nanoparticles ever measured in air samples in the United States. And metals, particulate metals, and nanoparticles are extremely biologically toxic.
And I take it they're typical byproducts of the use of, say, fourth-generation mini-nukes.
That's right. And the reason they would not use a regular nuclear weapon there is because it's a densely populated area, and the property owners would have had a fit if their property was contaminated with radiation. But what they may have used was fourth-generation nuclear weapons, and we don't even exactly know what they are, but we do know they're used because they release huge amounts of energy.
Would it have been the case that something like the following could have been the scenario, that they were detonating them in a series from the top down after the initial commencement of, you know, a mini collapse, but then they blew apart, pulverized about 80% of those buildings using mini nukes, fourth generation?
They certainly used something that released huge amounts of energy. It could have been fourth generation nuclear weapons, which are very hard to define because it's all classified, and we're only beginning to find out about them now from evidence, for instance, in the Lebanon bomb craters. But many countries are doing research and procuring these fourth-generation nuclear weapons who were never involved in nuclear weapons development before.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Lauren Moray. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. With Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today is Lauren Moray. I am inviting Judy Wood to appear on Tuesday. But when I had the opportunity, discovered Lauren's work, it seemed to me this would be a very good thing to discuss, and that Judy could then have the opportunity to talk about it in relation to her own work next week. Lauren, you know, when you describe these findings of the most massive accumulations of metallic particles and all that in the United States, it just makes me sick that our government should have done this atrocity.
Well, I'll tell you who did engineered 9/11. You just have to ask cui bono, who benefited. It was the CIA, it was M16 in Britain, it was the Mossad, and it was the ISI in Pakistan. And there were two reasons for 9/11. One was to establish a domestic police state in the U.S., which they did by passing the Patriot Act and by establishing the Northern Command, a domestic military, which is prohibited by the Posse Comitatus Act. I think it's 1875 or 1878. And the second thing they established was a military presence in Central Asia. And the fact that oil pipelines, vast oil reserves, and the cutting off of Asian countries from having any overland pipelines or access to those vast oil deposits is pretty obvious. And the other new discovery I've made is that Kazakhstan and Afghanistan have huge uranium deposits. And Afghani just told me that during the Soviet occupation of Afghanistan, the Soviets removed an entire mountain of uranium ore and transported it back to Russia. So the energy gangsters, and those gangsters are the Wall Street bankster gangsters, the British crown or the British throne, and it's the Zionist City of London money power. Those are the entities who engineered 9/11, and it was all for economic reasons.
Well, you know, Lauren, if you're right, in general, this whole thing has been planned for quite a substantial period of time, and it seems to me that, you know, stealing the election of 2000 and of 2004 to engineer Bush into office was something where they were going to brook no opposition, no matter how much money, force, corruption it took. They were going to get Bush and Cheney into office so they could implement this diabolical plan.
Let's go back over 100 years. The British discovered vast oil deposits under the sands of Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and the Middle East before 1900. They knew what those deposits were. They knew how much money was involved. That guaranteed a war in the Middle East, and it's not the first time. The Crusades, the last Crusades, were conducted for the benefit of European countries who used religion and a religious war to justify reestablishing the vastly wealthy Silk Route through Asia. That's why they conducted the last Crusades. It was to resuscitate the Silk Route and control it in the Middle East. And, oh gosh, now I lost my train of thought.
You're just going backwards. I was saying how long planning had to have been.
Yeah.
Going back 100 years. I was alluding to the elections in 2000 and 2004.
And you were offering
a somewhat broader historical perspective.
Yeah, I'm going back to when this all really started. And before 1920, Herbert Hoover, the past president of the United States, before he became president, he was a geologist. He discovered the largest oil reserves in the world offshore from Vietnam. That was before 1920. That guaranteed that there would be a war in that region at some time. And the Vietnam War was for securing oil reserves, depopulating Vietnam, and with Agent Orange, and securing the Golden Triangle for vast, a big cash flow of $800 billion or more in drug money through the U.S. economy.
This drug business is a recurrent theme. I mean, it seems to me part and parcel of the war on drugs is to ensure that the supply is constrained so that the demand is high and the price keeps up. I mean, there could be nothing, I think, more beneficial to the world than to legalize most of those recreational drugs. Take marijuana as a perfect example, where there's no good reason in the world why the recreational use of marijuana ought to be illegal. It could be legalized and regulated and sold as our tobacco products, which actually, like alcohol, are more harmful to our health than marijuana by a considerable margin. And then you could regulate, you could control their quality, you could tax them, you could not have to conduct this massive war on drugs. You wouldn't have a lot of civilians being turned into criminals because they'd prefer to smoke their high rather than drink it. To me, the whole rationale for the war on drugs is a manifest absurdity.
Well, the whole rationale for the way the United States has conducted overthrows of legitimate governments and just absolutely looting of mineral resources in other countries, weaker countries than we are, and the establishment of a nuclear weapons program and all these other horrific weapons they've developed in the nuclear weapons labs I've worked in, too, is you have to go back to the opium wars that started in the 1820s. And many of the very wealthy families in Britain and in the United States, their wealth was established through illicit drug peddling in China. And the poppy fields were in India and Turkey. And John Kerry's mother's family, the Forbes family, not the Forbes Fortune 500 family, a different one, she's descended from one of the first sea captains, Captain Forbes, who began opium trade, and Skull and Bones at Yale, which is really basically where the shadow government comes from. Those are the sons of the Wall Street banking establishment. These are the entities who are engineering wars, engineering horrific technologies that are killing off the planet, and they're in total cahoots with the British throne and the London money power. That's where it's coming from.
Well,
and all the rest is history since then, and they keep repeating it. The U.S. has had a permanent war economy from 1776, when we became an independent country. And scientists, this is why I quit Livermore Lab after 2 years. I was standing in my lab one day looking out the window and I went, my God, scientists in America are prostitutes for corporations or the military. I'm getting out of here.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Lauren Moray. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Today, my special guest is Lauren Moray, and we're talking about dust at the World Trade Center, the use of depleted uranium, and we're going to get in the second half into the broader issues about why depleted uranium is being used at all, since it's a weapon that's illegal under international law. Lauren, something we discussed earlier this morning that fascinated me was your observations about the helicopters around the World Trade Center. And I'd just like to invite your discussion about that phenomenon.
Well, I just came back from a four-month speaking tour in Asia, Southeast Asia, and I spent some time in Tokyo with Dave Shaw, who is a Canadian filmmaker, and he told me that he and his partner have footage of helicopters hovering near the World Trade Center with the door open. They actually have footage of this, and a very bright, like a strobe light, was pointed out the door. And he said, I don't know what what were they doing? And I said, well, they could have been painting an electronic target on the building for some kind of weapon system. And I don't know how many people have heard of HAARP. It's the High Auroral Atmospheric Research Project, which is a secret collaboration that originated in the 1970s between the Soviet Union and the United States. And I've traced this weapon system from the Woodpecker signal, which the Soviets turned on July 4th, 1976. The 200th anniversary of the United States, and we know that anniversaries and symbols are very important to these secret societies like the CIA and Skull and Bones and so forth. And I trace this to in 1978 UN treaty signing conference, 68 countries agreed to never use the environment as a weapon or to harm the environment with weapons of war. And at that treaty signing conference, the Soviet Union and the U.S. actually became secret partners to develop environmental weapons. And I knew about MK Ultra, the secret CIA mind control project, but I could never get from the Woodpecker signal or Woodpecker project to HAARP. I couldn't hook those up. Now, HAARP is the University of California, which manages the nuclear weapons labs at Los Alamos and Livermore, is involved with HAARP. And finally, an MKUltra victim came to me and said, could you help me write a book? I was kidnapped when I was 8 and taken into Project Artichoke. And I said, well, if your information checks out, I will help you. So he came to my house and brought his diary and all this information and documentation. It was absolutely solid. And then he showed me a photo of the safe house. And I said, well, where was the safe house? He said, well, it was at Livermore. And then I knew the Livermore lab had been involved. But I couldn't find a hint of a trail, nothing, until finally one day on the Internet, about a year ago, I found an awards newsletter at the Livermore Lab, because they always have to blow their own horn and show off and talk about things. And it said that 16 scientists had gone from Livermore to the NSA and CIA headquarters in Washington, D.C., to be awarded the highest civilian awards for their project called Woodpecker. And the newsletter said, we can't say what the Woodpecker Project is because it's top secret, but it's a way to get information there is no other way to get. And so then I was talking to Dave Selvey, this MK Ultra victim, and I said, when you were at that safe house in Livermore, did they ever put helmets on your head or wires, electrodes, or anything? And he said, oh, no, they only gave us chemicals that made us really sick. And I said, are you sure? And he said, well, as a matter of fact, they did take us upstairs sometimes and put us in, like, a dental chair and put this helmet on. And there was this really big transformer outside the window of that room. So I got him and a Manhattan Project scientist retired from Livermore, and we went out and looked at the safe house, and there was a transformer. And from the safe house, you could see where a large field owned by the FCC had been when he was they were conducting experiments on him. And it was a huge antenna field, and then you could see Livermore Lab right above that on the hill up above. And so I took him home, and I sat him down in front of the computer, and I showed him the HARP home webpage, and he almost fell off the chair. He said, we were the prototype for HARP. So Livermore is where the scientists developed the huge antenna from the Woodpecker Project with the Soviet Union. They developed the huge antenna around the Arctic Circle, and that was the hardware. MK Ultra was the software for mind control, and that is now what we have up around the Arctic Circle, and George Herbert Walker Bush is the CEO and chief architect of the World Mind Control Project, and that is in HARP. HARP is not only for mind control, the frequency of the brainwave is on the carrier signal, but it's also being used to for weather modification, weather warfare, for tectonic warfare. They can trigger earthquakes and volcanic eruptions. And as we saw with Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, they can actually trigger artificially natural disasters that can be used to concentrate wealth upwards and to steal valuable property and land from poor people or weak people who can't fight back.
God.
These are the horrific technologies that I'm talking about. They've got them. Kay Bailey Hutchison, is that her name?
Yeah.
No. Yeah. She is the one in Congress who sponsored the weather modification bill. I mean, it's all on the front page. It's in Congress. Congress passed a bill and funded the development of AIDS by the military at Fort Detrick. That came out of the Club of Rome. They were the ones, and that was started with CIA money. David Ray Griffin has ties to the Club of Rome. His very, very best friend is a world-famous attorney named Richard Falk, who's a specialist in genocide. He's the biggest phony I've ever met. They live a mile from each other at UC Santa Barbara. And I said, I hate Richard Falk's guts to David Ray Griffin when he asked me to write a chapter for his book, and David Falk was the co-author, or the co-editor. I mean, Richard Falk. And Richard Falk is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. That's CIA. So how in the world can leaders in the 9/11 movement with these kinds of ties be clean? It's impossible.
Ron, you take my breath away. There's so much for us to discuss. Just to pick up one tiny thread here before the break, you mentioned the use of those helicopters painting the towers electronically. That, and you mentioned HARP in relation to that. So I take it that your research on this subject is consistent with the possibility that some kind of directed energy weapon, laser, maser, plasmoid, whatever, antimatter could have been involved here too.
I think HARP was used. And the tie to the Department of Energy through Thomas Cahill is what triggered my suspicion.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Lauren Moray. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. My special guest today is not Judy Wood, whom I have invited to return on Tuesday, but rather Lauren Moray, who is an independent scientist who was an expert witness at the Tokyo International Tribunal for War Crimes in Afghanistan and a speaker at the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Conference. Lauren, just to summarize a bit your views about 9/11 and the Twin Towers, if I have understood what you have told me correctly, your inference, based on many different evidential indicators, suggests to you that thermite, if it played any role at all, cannot possibly explain the massive amount of energy involved in pulverizing the buildings, destroying them in such brief intervals of time, and that you suspect some combination of fourth-generation nuclear weapons and a HARP, or directed energy technology, may have been involved here.
Well, thermite or thermite is a chemical explosive which releases energy in a local sense, but what caused the pulverization of such huge volumes of material had to be a different kind of energy, and it had to be directed energy weapons or fourth generation nuclear weapons. It was something else. It was not a chemical explosive. Energy released from the nucleus of atoms is tremendously greater and vastly more energetic than chemical explosives. So,
would this extend to the so-called super thermite too, then, that you would suggest even super thermite would not be adequate to explain what we have here?
No. That I was talking to a civil engineer, actually the one who recommended me to you, and he just said that building was so strong. It was built like a pipe. It was pushing the envelope in terms of civil engineering to build a building like that, a tall, skinny building. And it had to be very, very strong. And when an engineer or a physicist or whatever sits down and they pencil out the energy budget, thermite just doesn't do it.
And I'm fascinated by your observation that some of the film record, and I know independently of film footage that displays those helicopters, that they were being used to, say, paint the building for as an electronic target. That, to me, is fascinating. It makes a great deal of sense.
Well, there are other things to consider. For instance, that Larry Silverstein was the single, I guess you could say, building manager or leasing agent in the United States who had more skull and bones clients than any other realty manager in the United States. Does that give you a clue?
And I understand at one point when the footage that included the helicopters was going to be shown that Alex Jones requested that it not be?
Yes, he warned the filmmaker, and we won't mention the filmmaker's name, but he warned the filmmaker that the big boys didn't like that and ordered him to take it out of his film.
As though one would want to alter authentic footage of what actually happened to the Twin Towers for the sake of the big boys or anyone else, if you have an interest in truth.
Well, what is absolutely mandatory is that people remain independent from cults or celebrity figures or Kool-Aid vendors, whatever you want to call them, and to use critical thinking and remain independent and do their own investigations. And because there are too many people walking around who are flypaper for just naive and people who are less educated or aware of the details of certain disciplines or the science of it. If you're a scientist, you just sit down and you look at the basic science. You pencil out the energy budget. and thermite or thermite doesn't do it. So that means who's behind Stephen Jones? What else is he saying? Who has, does he have ties to? Well, he's a Mormon. He's at Salt Lake City at the University of Utah.
It was Provo at that Brigham Young. Yeah.
Oh, well, Brigham Young. Yeah. But, you know, the Mormons run the State Department. There's overrepresentation of Mormons at the nuclear weapons labs. You know, you have to look at, this isn't about religion. This has nothing to do with Muslims or Jews or Mormons or Christians or anything. This is about economics. It's about money.
You know, your point about New Orleans struck me because I'd been looking at it politically, that perhaps the motivation for creating this super powerful hurricane and allowing it to hit New Orleans was to disperse the black population so that Louisiana would become more Republican and less Democratic. But the point you
it was to steal the extremely valuable property in the Ninth Ward where the grandchildren and the great-grandchildren of slaves are living now. And the oil companies want that property. Bush's rich friends want that property. They want to develop housing for oil company workers, and they want to build a big Las Vegas-style gambling center. They want tourism and gambling. You know, the ruling elite stand on two legs. They stand on organized crime and on the military. That's the only way they can stay in power and continue to rip off the ordinary people. And what I see happening all over the United States, and especially
Well, the military and the crime, the mob, you know, they've worked in collusion for an awful long time. Around the period of JFK, for example, the CIA would kill citizens abroad and the mafia at home.
They've always stayed in power that way. You don't think Onassis was a nice guy. He took Howard Hughes on the most shocking trip that Howard Hughes ever had. He took him into the heart of the ghetto and the mafia and the criminal elements in New York City. Howard Hughes had never seen anything like that. That's how Onassis stayed in power. And what has happened now is they are integrating organized crime all over the world, so it's one big seamless racketeering operation. And the Yakuza and the CIA and the Mossad and the ISI and whatever is in it replaced the KGB in Russia, and these huge gangster organizations are all working together now. And the wealthy ruling elite, the Imperial Family of Japan and the Rockefellers and the Forbeses and the British Crown and the Dutch Crown and all these people all over the world, these very wealthy elite families are all working together. Do you know what Shogun means? Have you heard Shogun, the word Shogun?
Yes, but I'm not.
Sho means the Lord and Goon means the general.
So we're talking about the general Lord.
The ruling elite and the military. That's what Shogun means.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Lauren Moray. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. My special guest today is Lauren Moray, who is an independent scientist who's done a huge amount of work on depleted uranium, radiation contamination of the Hawaiian Islands and many other areas, including the Middle East. She was an expert witness of the Kyoto International Tribunal for War Crimes in Afghanistan, and she has made many astonishing and astute observations about 9/11, the possible causation of the destruction of the Twin Towers, which, Lauren, I infer could also be helpful in explaining the damage to the other buildings, such as 6, 5, 4, and 3, which it has always seemed to me that any conventional account, including even thermite and thermate, cannot really account for.
Right. You know, The reason we're in the Middle East and Central Asia is to control energy resources. And it's to contain the tiger economies, which are China, India, Japan, and Korea. They're the biggest threat to the Zionist Anglo-American economic empire. And so what we've done is gone in and cut off the oil supplies or any possibility that pipelines could transport oil overland to these economies. And we are forcing Asian countries to travel by sea all the way to Israel. Israel is being set up as the gas pump on the Red Sea. That's where the oil is going to be loaded on ships for Asian countries instead of traveling overland to those countries. And this is to economically control and choke down our competitors. And with, now I lost my...
Shut down our competitors while creating Israel as the energy dispenser for the world.
Right. And the oil cop for the Middle East, they're going to be the military cop enforcer for the Ceyhan pipeline, which comes from the Caspian region, overland to, it goes through Azerbaijan to Turkey and then to a Mediterranean port in southern Turkey. And they're building three huge pipelines underwater from that the terminus of the Ceyhan pipeline to Israel, and it's going underwater around Lebanon. One will be for fresh water to Israel, one will be for oil, and one will be for natural gas. And what people don't know is the day the bombing attack by Israel on Lebanon started, there was a huge party and celebration held in Turkey for the completion of the Ceyhan pipeline. And British Petroleum, Chevron, Royal Dutch Shell, they were all there drinking and partying while the complete destruction of Lebanon began.
And, of course, when you have economic behemoths of this character who are so massively greedy and have no respect for the rights of nations, I mean, assassinating politicians and bulldozing opposition is trivial child's play.
Well, this friend of mine in Hawaii, Shannon Rudolph, she did it really well. She said, politics is show business for ugly people.
That's very well said. And, of course, you know, the Bush administration has opposed any idea of timelines, principally, of course, because they not only had no plan to exit from Iraq, they had no intention of ever leaving, which is part and parcel of these 14 permanent bases, which are going to protect oil interests, undoubtedly, as the two permanent bases in Afghanistan do that pipeline. But they do believe in benchmarks where this enormous pressure has been placed on the Maliki government to get that oil privatization act passed, which is going to deprive Iraq of some 80% of its own natural resources.
Oh, we're going to rip them off for everything. It's just a cloud of voracious locusts just munching through economies around the world. Let me read to you what Admiral Michael Mullen said in the Honolulu Star Bulletin on May the 9th. I was in Honolulu when the Pacific Command had a command change, and Admiral Gary Roughead was replaced by a new admiral, and Admiral Mullen, who was the head of the Navy, showed up, of course, for this very important change over. And this is what Admiral Michael Mullen said in the newspaper about combat operations in Iraq and Afghanistan. He said, quote, "The enemy now is basically evil and fundamentally hates everything we are, the democratic principles for which we stand for. This war is going to go on for a long time. It's a generational war," unquote. And this is what Admiral Gary Roughead said. He was the Pacific Fleet Commander outgoing on May 7th when he was quoted in the Honolulu Star Bulletin. He said, quote, "We who live here really understand the energy that is taking place in the Pacific today, the trade, the increasing prosperity, and the emergence of the economies here. So this is permanent war. It always has been. It's a continuation of overthrow after overthrow of legitimate countries, governments, and it's just plain looting. It's global looting." And, you know, there's that great book called I Was an Economic Hitman. Pretty clearly talks about all of that. And the other ramification is that there is a police state being established globally in country after country. And there's a very good paper on the policestateplanning.com website, The Police State Roadmap, March 2005 edition by Michael Neal. And this pretty much lays out exactly what we're heading for. And also Stephen Kinzer wrote an excellent book. It's a new book called Overthrow, America's Century of Regime Change from Hawaii to Iraq. And it's by Times Book 2006.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Lauren Murray. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. My guest today, Lauren Murray. Lauren, during our conversation earlier today, I was dumbstruck by your analysis about the use of depleted uranium in the Middle East. Here we are covering vast areas with a material that has a half-life of 4.5 billion years, which is coincidentally the same age as the same length of time as the age of the Earth, and the consequences are going to be simply devastating. It's in violation of international law, the UN Charter. We're using weapons of mass destruction, and we are the terrorist state.
Well, let's put it this way. All during atmospheric testing, the equivalent of 40,000 Hiroshima bombs, the equivalent number of radioactive atoms, was released into the atmosphere. Since 1991, the U.S. and Britain have admitted using about 4,000 to 6,000 tons of depleted uranium, which is a big lie. It's a vast underestimation. 800 tons of depleted uranium is the atomicity equivalent of 83,000 Nagasaki bombs. We have released at least the equivalent of 400,000 Nagasaki bombs since 1991. And when you look at the public health data, which I procured in Japan, U.S. government data from Centers for Disease Control and other places, England, India, we're in a global epidemic of diabetes and other chronic illnesses caused by the global pollution of the entire atmosphere. Even lower orbital space is contaminated with uranium from atomic bombs, nuclear bomb testing, and from all this DU. The Mir spacecraft was brought back down to Earth, and the space mitt, which protected the instrument package from cosmic rays and so the solar wind, was analyzed and found to be contaminated with uranium.
Do you think the cretinous criminals who are promoting all of this don't understand that it's not just going to affect localized areas, but it's going to contaminate the entire globe, as you're describing?
Well, you know, our little friend Admiral Michael Mullen, I was just talking about, he's the head of the Navy. He has now been nominated to become the chief of staff of the entire military in the U.S. He was in the Associated Press on Wednesday, June 13th, that's yesterday, calling for a global military of united countries from all over the world to be the global military cop. And that's pretty interesting, since that is also what the European Constitution called for that failed recently. In the European Constitution, which France opposed, they were the first country, and then Holland, and then Germany retracted their vote in favor of it. It called for every member of the European Union to maintain a military which they had no control over. The jurisdiction would be turned over to NATO under the command of the United States. So do you think these wars and this poisoning of the planet is slowing down? Absolutely not. I was born at Camp Lejeune. I lived three times at Cherry Point, 29 Palms, Barbers Point, and El Toro. What do you think my father did?
Well, as a former Marine Corps officer, you give him my regards. Semper Fi.
He absolutely was so frustrated with me. He couldn't control me ever from the time I was born. And so my poor father is dead, but, God, I don't know what he would think about what I'm doing.
What rank did he attain, Lord?
He was a lieutenant colonel. He went to Corpus Christi Naval Flight School, and he was a test pilot and then a pilot all through his career.
I take it your view is that the use of depleted uranium is part and parcel of a broader project that's related to the New World Order concerning the reducing the population of the human species.
In 1945, the introduction of horrendous nuclear technologies began, and the permanent contamination of the entire atmosphere and environment with radioactive elements, isotopes. And all atomic and hydrogen bombs had thousands of pounds of depleted uranium in every one of them. This is one of the best-kept military secrets in the world, which means the huge increases in chronic illnesses that began after 1945 are related to not only the fission products that everybody was afraid of, but the uranium contamination. And when the United States government, and I'm sure that Skull and Bonesmen made this secret decision to move atmospheric testing from the Marshall Islands, where we knew we'd wiped out the Marshall Islanders, well, you know, they were more like us than the mice, but they were good guinea pigs for us to study. They moved atmospheric testing in 1952 to the Nevada test site. It was absolutely deliberate, and the only reason they could have done that was to destroy the American population, the public health, the mental health. And do you know what the rate of mental illness is in the United States? Now it's the highest in the world. Over 26% of our population has some form of mental illness.
Ye gods. And when the Bush twins have genetically deformed children, will W begin to appreciate that what he is involved in is catastrophic?
Bush and his five brothers and sisters were all genetically damaged by radiation from fallout. Barbara Bush and George Herbert Walker Bush had their thyroids removed because of radiation exposure. All of the Bush children, Bush and all his siblings, had learning disabilities, and the woman who worked with them in therapy lived next door to a scientist I worked with in Washington, D.C. She went and worked with those children. George Bush is brain damaged. He really is. And he had a sister, a baby sister named Robin, a toddler, who got leukemia from bomb testing fallout. George and Barbara took her to Walter Reed, never told the rest of the children she was sick or what was wrong with her. And the day she died, they left her in the hospital room and walked out the door and went off and played golf the rest of the day. And George and Barbara Bush never buried their own daughter. Barbara's mother buried her 2 years later. Do you think they care about their kids?
God.
God. They don't.
But
they
anyone
don't
with
care.
Any appreciation of ecology and evolution, Lauren, is going to understand that what we're talking about is a major alteration in the environment that's going to cause huge changes, have powerful effects on the prospects for the survival of the human species.
Let me just shock your socks off one more time. If a sperm or an egg is damaged by radiation, the DNA, when that sperm or egg or both of them are damaged, come together and form the first cell in a new organism, that DNA damage is repeated in every cell in that new living thing. And that damage is passed on for the next 40,000 generations.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Lauren Moray. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. Concluding my conversation with Lauren Moray. Lauren, I have the feeling that I need to get you and Judy Wood together to dish the dirt. I think there's a great deal that you can contribute to one another's research, and I really want to contribute to bringing that about, because the role of the dust and the dirt here in covering things up is, I think, of great importance. For the moment, however, having you on now, and I want to have you back again and soon, I'd just like to invite your reflections on the role of the 9/11 community in relation to these larger issues. In other words, if you were trying to explain to somebody, maybe in a distant land in whom you had great confidence, what's really going on here, how would you do it?
Well, I've had a lot of experience over the last 5 years with the 9/11 movement, and all I can say is wall-to-wall CIA wallpaper. It's so infiltrated and manipulated, it's pathetic. But there are individuals who are very, very good researchers, and they have pursued the truth at great peril and experienced a lot of harassment. You and me and Judy and others. So there's no doubt that 9/11 was an inside job. I mean, even General Ivashov, who was head of the Russian military at that time, said that. He said the U.S. is the most protected country in the world, and the Pentagon is the most well-protected building in the world. So, and he said it's impossible for the events of 9/11 to have happened without involvement of intelligence agencies. And he said generally terrorist events are, he said they can't happen. Terrorist groups can't exist without the support of intelligence agencies. And he said, the terrorist events are usually carried out by the military and politicians. But in this case, 9/11, he said it was actually the oligarchs, in other words, the ruling elite, and the military. Now, going back to depopulation, I mean, these are conspiracies. These are all conspiracies. And conspiracy is not a dirty word. It's been discredited by people who are the conspirators and people and don't want the regular population to catch on. I'd like to read a part of a letter by Sue Arago. She was a CIA medical doctor who finally escaped from them. They raped her and tortured her. Dick Cheney was involved in it, and she lives in Canada now. But this is part of her letter. She says the Rockefellers and other industrialists that have been funding, quote, medical research, unquote, and vaccine development and cornered the blood supply have long been actively involved in killing off people as a eugenics / rule the world measure. Please see my third letter to the committee regarding that. I have found much other supporting documentation of that since, which I will add later. Unfortunately, these are not unfounded conspiracy theories as the CIA would like you to believe. Wars are being fought that kill people every day. The cabal behind them went to a lot of effort to make that happen. They will also make a lot of money off them. There are people in the world plotting to mass murder on a daily basis. That is not a theory, it is a fact. The CIA exists due to that fact. The building at the CIA and the fact that people walk in and out of it all day means that the conspiracy to kill people in the third world is not a theory but a very large and viable fact. Mass murder is what the CIA does / instigates as its main function. The Fort Detrick U.S. Army Chemical and Biowarfare Lab is not there just to give a few people a meaningless job. It is there because it is being used to make deadly weapons to kill people, and those agents are used regularly by the CIA in the normal course of its work of killing people. And if people want to know more about this, Jim, Behold a Pale Horse is a great book to read by a guy who was in naval intelligence. He wrote that book, and he was the first person assassinated under the Patriot Act.
William Cooper.
William Cooper, yes.
Let me ask you this, Lauren. From our previous conversation, I take it you believe that a lot of the source of disinformation in the 9/11 community emanates from contacts or persons who have been at Los Alamos or at Lawrence Livermore Lab.
Yeah, many of them. If you go into the backgrounds of the main actors in the 9/11 truth movement, many of them have ties to military backgrounds, their families or their parents or they themselves, or to Los Alamos or Livermore, and you never know this. They don't tell you. It slips out over time. And you begin to connect the dots and understand why they're taking the positions they're taking. And, of course, it's really funny. Someone from the KGB came over to the U.S. recently, former KGB, and said, you know, we were so clumsy and crude in how we did, stunts under in the Soviet Union and we did intelligence and propaganda. He said the United States is light years ahead of the Soviet Union in terms of sophistication of propaganda and manipulating the public.
Back in the USSR.
Back in the USSR.
It's absolutely stunning. Lauren, there's so much for us to discuss. I really want to bring you back in soon. Is there a chance I could book you already for Wednesday?
Sure.
That would be sensational.
Yeah, but I don't know if your audience can take it.
Well, listen, we're dedicated to truth, Lauren. I mean, that's all we have left. And if we can't expose the truth, there's no point in our pursuing any of this. So, I mean, there's nothing that could be more important to us. It's anguishing. My conversation with you have caused me to form knots in my stomach. I mean, literally. The idea that these monstrous criminals are committing these atrocities worldwide, and they're trying to take out not just a handful, not just thousands or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands, but billions of people, and that what they're doing may inadvertently, it will get out of control almost inevitably and potentially destroy the entire human species. It's going to make our habitat uninhabitable, and the consequences here are overwhelmingly more serious than the simple matter of genetically modified crops, which also represent hazards of their own. We have to understand it, and I'm so grateful to you.
It's all of these, it's the chemical pollution, it's the GMO, it's the radiation, it's the bioweapons, biological agents. They're all acting synergistically, multiplying the effects of each other. And if you look at public health data, I spent days in the basement of the Hawaiian legislature going through the Hawaiian public health data. It's all there. It's all there when you put those numbers on a map and make sense out of it. When it's piles of numbers, people don't catch on. But when you put those numbers, the breast cancer distribution in Hawaii, it's very clear that the two highest areas of cancer in Hawaii are downwind from fresh radiation sources.
Lauren, I can't thank you enough for everything you're doing. I look forward to having you back on Wednesday. We'll continue our conversation. Meanwhile, let me express my profound gratitude to you.
Thank you.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host. You've been listening to The Dynamic Duo.